This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Welcome, everybody, to Interesting AF, or Interesting as Fuck, depending on your mood for today. And we are talking about a doozy. So get yourselves whatever comfort mechanism that you have or coping mechanism that you have. And we're going to discuss today generational trauma. Hey. Yay. And I think this will touch everybody, even though people say, oh yeah, I'm fine. No, you have generational trauma. No matter where you are, no matter where you're from, shit happened and you have generational trauma. You might even have your own trauma. Yes. There's probably trauma from a couple of generations before that has affected how you're dealing with the trauma. So are you ready for this, Elaine? Because this one's tough.
I'm ready.
All right.
I think. Yes, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Right. Do you have tissues? Because we might have tissues. As always.
I also have bourbon. That's surrounded good. By bourbon.
Yeah, I had my new hyperfixation snack thing, which I found some like Thai seaweed snacks, which are magnificent, by the way. I'll show you the brand. And they're strips. They're not like squares. So they're strips. And there's like hot, spicy. There's like different versions. And then a hard-boiled egg, cucumber slices with everything bagel seasoning on the cucumber and the egg. And then I like make a mini sandwich because the seaweed is like actually pretty like solid. And you just like make a like mini sandwich of the seaweed that's like either spicy or wasabi flavor or whatever, cucumber and egg.
That sounds incredible.
It is like hyperfixation snack.
And send me a picture of one and I'll put it on our Instagram page.
I will. It is it's so good. Oh my God. I'm just obsessed. And yeah, eat that. But generational trauma is eating is one way that I cope with my generational trauma.
Eating and wildly inappropriate humor is why Linda and I get along so well, because that is how we cope with the worst of it.
Wildly. Again, I saw this quote this week that said, if your texts get leaked and you get fired at work, then that's how you know your friends. And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Indeed. So as I love definitions, what is generational trauma for all those people that are coming in and asking, you know, what this is? So,
sure. So
there's generational trauma and then there's intergenerational trauma, right? So there's a couple of different versions, but what we think is generational trauma is really intergenerational trauma. So essentially it is the transmission of trauma or its legacy in the form of psychological consequences of an injury or attack, poverty, and so forth, from the generation experiencing the trauma to the subsequent generations. Which means examples are my grandparents were in a Revolutionary War. So they were part of that. And they had family members that were killed or committed suicide because they didn't want to be prisoners, lost property, poverty, insecurity, all of that. And essentially how they raised their children, thinking about, you know, any types of anxieties, really worrying about what's going on in your life, worrying about where your next meal is going to come from, worrying about if the rug is going to be pulled under you, not having enough resources, hoarding things. That then manifests itself in how they, how my parents raised, like raised my generation of like me and cousins. So that's kind of how you see it. And you see that in, you know, Second World War, generations, you see that in war zones that like have peace, but then, you know, have all this generational trauma. So that is essentially what it is. And that definition, just so you know, is from the Dictionary of Psychology. So essentially the APA, the you know, kind of leading organization on psychology. So that's what generational trauma is. And obviously affects how we connect to people. So my parents, how they connect to me, how I connect to my children. And the concept is, you know, if you know about it, you can break it, because there are obviously bad aspects of this, but there are also good ones, right? So there's, you know, that that is the definition. Elaine, are you okay?
I sure.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, but already my head is reeling to be like, ooh, yeah, that explains that and that.
Yeah.
Like one example that pops into my head when you talk about more like the World War II era is my grandparents were not a part of any revolution, which is like, you know, thankfully, because that's hard. And I think I would be very interested to hear more about that if you're willing to share, of course, and kind of how that contributed to your family's generational trauma. We're going to get real here, as you know, we like to do. But I think of my grandma, who was born around just before the Great Depression, and how she, like, if you ripped Christmas paper, like wrapping paper, so that she couldn't save it. Like, she wasn't upset about it, but she didn't like it. So, like, that woman would reuse a piece of aluminum foil 100 times if she could. She would wash out by hand Ziploc bags, because it's just her parents were the ones who lived through the Great Depression. They had to fight for every meal. They didn't know where the next meal was coming from. They had to reuse God knows what, because they just didn't know, you couldn't get anything. So, and I don't, you know, trauma, not necessarily, like definitely trauma for her parents. And I don't think it was traumatic for her to have to, you know, reuse and all of that stuff. But it's just those little ways, I think, are examples of this passed down generational trauma for sure.
Yeah, and it creates stressors, right? It creates, right. Oh, I need to, I'm saving all this in case something happens. And, you know, this is the same thing with my parents, right? My parents' generation. Like, my dad has a thing where he throws everything out. So he doesn't create emotional attachments to things.
Okay.
Right?
My dad's the opposite.
And then you have the other gamut, which I have, like, my mom, which is, like, she'll try to get her final use out of everything, mm-hmm. right? My dad was like, I'm not getting attached to anything. Fuck this shit.
Is that because he's worried that if he creates an emotional attachment to it, he can lose it?
Yeah, exactly. That's my, you know, non-psychologist, you know, and if there's a psychologist around, I'm assuming that's what it is. And then that's, you know, he like focuses on that. And like, well, my family does the same exact, like my grandfather and like my grandmother was a hoarder. Like when she passed away and they started clearing out what she had stuff from like forever ago. And it makes sense to keep some things. Obviously you want to keep some mementos and things like that, but you know, damn, like they spent, I think, months clearing out like her house and what the things, and they had moved too. So they had like downsized and things like that. And she had this like armoire that kept like, they kept just like digging out and digging out. And she was like, yeah, she never threw anything. And she always loved a deal. So like everything, when something was like really on sale, she would buy it. because, you know, she was like, this is a price that I can't get anywhere else. And you're like, really? Okay. So that is kind of how I think things affect. And that affects kind of, you know, how you kind of grow up, right? Like, my husband has a very different thought process. Again, World War II, you know, his parents were not, but they still like have these kind of save everything and use everything twice, and which mm-hmm. again has its good sides, right? The good sides of it is
sustainability,
because climate change matters. And
yes,
oh, also we have no exit strategy anymore.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Or that asteroid that was supposedly, you know, 3% chance of hitting us in 2032, the likelihood has now gone to 0.28. So we must find another exit strategy. Let's check in with the ocean aliens. Maybe they'll save us. Anyway.
Fuck it. Let's just go down in a fiery flame at this point. Oh, wait. Was that a generational trauma? Was that generational trauma speaking?
It is. What?
Right? Oh, my God.
And we're creating, you know, and we have this uncertainty now of, like, what's going to happen to our kids?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They, you know, everything's shifting on them. How? And because our primal urge is to have resources. It's to have resources. And to think about how we maintain those resources. And what makes us, like, more think about connection is to think about ourselves beyond our individual unit and think about ourselves in connection and with other people. And I think generational trauma also kind of affects how we connect with people, right? If you, by nature, don't trust people. So I have a very hard time trusting people because, you know, of all the things that, you know, when a revolutionary war and wars and things like that, that brings about spying, people telling on. There's a very specific way of how you deal with people. So when I trust somebody, I trust them. And because I've already made, like, very, like, internal thought, and I go, fuck, that's just generational trauma biting me in the ass again. Just trust people. It's okay. And if people, like, you're not going to die. Right. Like with us, it was like people were going to torture you and you were going to die. Like that's like I have like an intense like reaction to go, this is life or death. Like I'm trusting this person with my life, like already like thinking about it that way. And that's why it's so hard for me to trust, because innately in my body, I'm like, wait, and you might, they might kill you. Like, and that's a stress response to something that's honestly not really that serious if I'm just sharing facts at work and not gossip.
But there's also that, you know, and maybe this is a silver lining, or maybe this would be unhealthy to a therapist, or, but like, then you also have those moments of like trauma bonding, right? Like I would argue it's how you and I became friends, right? Like being pregnant and having children is traumatic. Like
traumatic.
It is part of nature, but it is also traumatic because your body is literally going through a traumatic experience. It's draining. You know, you and I both had C-sections, which is, you want to talk about fucking trauma to your body. Like that is a definition of trauma, right? And so we absolutely trauma bonded because we both went through that vulnerable thing, not exactly at the same time, but close enough that like you were someone who was just so open with me about that traumatic experience.
I was like, that sucks.
Like that like it's why we're here today. Like we don't, our work paths never crossed. We just happened to work in the same office, but like we trauma bonded. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. It's like, I don't like when people I know and love and care about go through something horrible, but to know you're not doing it alone is sometimes very helpful. And I think it was like one of those silver linings of going through COVID and the deepest, darkest lockdown days when it was the most terrifying and nobody really knew what was going on is like, okay, well, we're all doing this together. It sucks, but like we all know what it feels like and we can all connect on. And now I feel like it's gone down the last like year or so, but 2022, 2023, people are finally coming out and traveling again and going to work conferences again. And people would ask, oh, what was your COVID like? What was your COVID like? People ask me all the time, what was it like being pregnant? Or like, what was the scariest part of having a baby during COVID? Like, those are questions I get all the time, which, you know, how are we going to pass this down to our kids? And depending on the timing of when you had your kids, like some kids were more aware of the fact that they couldn't go see their friends. And then we have younger kids who very fortunately had no fucking clue that we were in a very scary time. Like, it's so funny. My parents would be like, oh my gosh, he's not even going to recognize you in that mask. And I'm like, he doesn't know the world without masks. Like when he was a newborn, we made everybody come in. They had to be fully vaccinated. And then some, right? Tdap, all that stuff, RSV, whatever you could get, like the more the better. And you
vaccines work.
They fucking work. Ugh. But like you had to be vaccinated to come into our house and you had to wear a mask. And they were like, oh, well, he won't recognize me. I'm like, he doesn't fucking know who you are. Like he's 2 weeks old. Like,
what are you doing?
He has no frontal cortex. Like, that's not going to be a problem. But, you know, there are kids out there right now who are a little bit older than ours who have separation anxiety, who because they felt, and I think that's a good example of how it passes down, is it's not even you have to be fully aware situationally. It's that they knew something was off. They only knew having their parents around, a parent or both parents around all the time, to then go into a world where they were like, they had to be separate from them because they were going to daycare because their parents were going back to work or whatever the situation is. Like, that's traumatic. So there's all these weird different examples of it.
Yeah. And it's a life and death thing, right? Some kids were old enough to understand that people died and they went away and they got affected with death way earlier than, you know, the normal kind of norm of really understanding what it is. And I think to your point about trauma bonding, I think, and a lot of the articles that I read, and there's a couple of articles, and one was talking about breaking the cycle of generational trauma, right? And it is about connecting and talking to others that are going through a similar issue. So in a way, we actually don't have trauma because we talked about it. We were going through it at the same time and we were going, it's going to be okay. We're scared. We're doing this. This is annoying, blah, blah, blah. But we were resolving our trauma as we were going through it. And it's called generational growth, right? So as we were talking about it, we bonded over an experience. And remember, there are other people in our office that also were pregnant at the same time, but we didn't have that same connection. It's because there was a concept where we wanted to talk about it and we wanted to get it out. And it affected us, obviously, and it's going to affect us. COVID is going to have an effect on us, but we were able to talk about it. We were not shy about going, this sucks and I can't go to the doctor without a mask, even though, you know, fully, you know, masked and we're, you know, talking about masks that are important and vaccines. we still talked about it and we bonded because we were getting over it at the same time. Right. So, and that is the key to kind of healing generational trauma, is really thinking about how you talk and how you connect to others. That is the irony of breaking generational trauma. Mostly generational trauma wants you to withdraw, but the idea of getting over it is to connect and talk to others that have gone through similar experiences than you, being open about your feelings and being open about how you manage, you know, what is going on around you.
That's so interesting too, because I think I feel like I talk about this so much right now, is our generation's willingness and the stigma going away around therapy. My parents, our parents' generation, there is this stigma that if you go to therapy, it's some type of failure. It's witch doctor magic bullshit. Like, it doesn't work. Yes, it fucking does. if you know going into it, like how it works, which is too broad of a phrase. You don't go into therapy for your therapist to understand you. You go to therapy for you to understand you, so you can be a better person for the people around you. You don't go to therapy to fix others. You go to therapy to fix yourself. And if you know that going into it, it will work. And I never even thought about that, Linda, what you just said. It's called with generational growth. I think that is so amazing. And I think it just proves the point that therapy works. And yes, I think sometimes it is even more beneficial to talk to people you know and trust, and or people you don't know, but like to make that connection, right? Which is why we're here on this podcast. But there is a point where it's not fair to the people who know and love you the most to be that source of therapy all the time. Like, sometimes you need an unbiased professional to help you break that generational trauma cycle. Like, that is okay. You didn't fail. It is hard to live in this world, period. Period. And if you need to go talk to somebody, go talk to somebody. Like, there are resources, there are ways to do it, to be able to afford to do it. I feel like not only are we breaking, you know, your own family generational trauma, but like, we as millennials, Gen Z, you know, hopefully we continue to break this. I think even Gen X, a lot of Gen X is responsible for this too, is we're breaking that cycle of therapy being a failure or whatever weird stigma people put around it.
And I, you know, posted this to my Instagram yesterday. It's a video, a small video about a woman, a doctor called Dr. Martha Beck. And her book is on my list, but basically she's talking about anxiety and how it took over her life. But one of the things that she goes into this little snippet where she was on this other podcast was talking about how humans are one of the only species that die by suicide. So essentially our brain creates a reality. Why we were able to like jump, again, another good book is Yuval Harari's Homo Sapiens, basically talks about how humans created a shared reality to become top of the food chain. So we were able to say, you know, other animals, for example, would say, hey, there's a lion over there, don't go over there. But what we would say would be like, there's a lion over there every time at 2, so avoid that. So you, like, every day you would avoid that. We wouldn't have to say the same. So we would create a shared reality saying, essentially, what we do, we're one of the only ones that do, is create an alternative reality that's worse than the actual reality that exists. And therefore, we think death is more advisable than a reality we've made up in our heads.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
That's crazy. It's crazy. It's scary.
And scary. So essentially, we are overrun by our brain. When our body sends us signals, right? It sends us fear signals. It sends us anxiety signals. It sends us hunger signals, whatever. And we are overrun by our brain. We like to think that our brain is the one, but our body has like very different thought processes. And so the idea is to align, you know, both. And that's why feelings, understanding feelings is important, right?
Yeah.
If you have a feeling of anxiety, that means you fear something is going to happen. So what are you going to do to overcome that? Your brain, you can't let your brain kind of overrun the bodily feeling that you have, right? Feelings are in your body. Like they're in your body, right? If it's anxiety, you got to move around. And one of her theories is actually creativity is the opposite of anxiety, which I'm going to read the book and I'll give everybody kind of a rundown of it when I finish. But I thought that was very interesting.
I love that.
The opposite of anxiety is actually creativity.
I love that.
Which I agreed, love it. But that's, you know, I think the concept of Gen Z and millennials realizing that feelings matter and we need to know, and that's how we are breaking our own generational trauma by teaching our children how to recognize their feelings and how to recognize that feelings go away.
Yes.
They're not there all the time. Yes, you can feel sad, but it goes away. Yes, you can feel hungry, so eat something and it'll go away. Yes, you feel scared. So what do you need to do? I as a parent need to remind my child that they're safe. That they're safe here, that they're not in danger. So that's, and I think that's one of the best ways we're breaking intergenerational trauma or generational trauma is that we are teaching our kids that feelings matter, feelings go away, and we need to talk about our feelings. And
yes,
it comes back to your therapy point that I think therapy, if I hadn't had, and my second daughter did not sleep for the first year of her life. So I went through 12 months sleeping less than 3 hours a night, every night. And if I hadn't had therapy while and after, because I obviously went through a lot of shit through that, is that I was able to talk it out. I was able to manage it. I was able to manage my guilt because my daughter would just scream. And your instinct as a parent is to make your kid feel better. And I could never make her feel better. And it was an intense proposition every night without having much sleep. So I think those are the things that, you know, therapy will help you talk it out. And they give you coping strategies as well, and how to do it. And also, if you need meds, get the fucking meds.
Get the meds.
Get the meds. It's a brain chemistry thing. If your brain chemistry is off, there's no amount of anything that you can do, writing, journaling, if it's an actual brain running one, if it's an actual brain chemistry imbalance. And of course, exercise is good and it helps, you know, like you said, dopamine exercise gives you endorphins, and endorphins makes you not want to kill your husband. So like, you know.
Oh God, I love a good, well-placed Legally Blonde joke. Well done.
That was my favorite. And then you took a shower. Yes, she took a shower. But like, but that, best part in a movie ever. Anyway, so all this to say is that get the fucking meds and research it. Like if it's something that makes you uncomfortable, you know, medication can be given as needed. You don't have to take it all the time. You can take it as needed and like stop and wean off. So there's a lot of things. Obviously, there are some other mental illnesses that is not the case. But if you're going through things like depression, anxiety, there are ways to kind of cope and manage with different things. All this to say, I think and then there was another article that I read from around how you heal generational trauma. And it's this organization called Direct Relief. And they, you know, kind of funded a project in Alaska, where, as we know, a lot of indigenous populations have a lot of trauma from, you know, generations around, you know, what happened to the Native Americans in, you know, Trail of Tears. So a lot of, you know, taking the land, the fighting over generations smallpox, the diseases and all of that. But essentially, in Alaska, there's a small project that's called the Alaska Art Alliance, and it provides space. And this is an activity that's focused on men, because men tend to have, you know, higher rates of chronic illnesses, alcoholism, homelessness, abuse, and all of that. So they focused on, homelessness. And essentially they would create an activity where they would write ivory, like they would make traditional Native Alaskan designs on ivory. So they would physically do things in order to kind of heal and reclaim their culture. And it's really through collection, through connection, because they connect with the artwork, they connect with the other men that come with them, that stay with them. And it's, you know, honestly, this it was not very, you know, it was not very expensive. So $150,000 for 25 men to kind of put this, like, to teach them the cultural practice of ivory carving, because it's a big thing in the Alaska Native population, Native American population. So I thought it was great. You know, also do things with your hands, not just talk, but actually be with your community and go back and think about your culture, because their generational trauma was because their culture was being stripped away from them, right? So, you know, how many kids got sent to orphanages and got stripped, you know, of their culture and their identity. And how you kind of find connection through that. So I thought that was beautiful. And I'm sure there are other examples of those things. But yeah, you know, little examples of how you can get better and heal.
Yeah. Hopefully. I think it's also okay to feel like, I'm thinking in my head in terms of like generational trauma, right? You and I both grew up in areas very close to the most impacted cities of 9/11. I grew up near New York. You grew up near DC. And I bring that up only because we were all impacted that day. And we may have seen some things that add to our generational trauma, but just because you lived in Washington State or California or Wyoming all the way across the country doesn't mean you were less impacted. Like, your proximity to something doesn't necessarily mean you can't feel trauma from it, is more what I'm trying to say. Like, I grew up in the town next, like one of the towns next to where Sandy Hook happened.
Yeah.
We knew someone who died in that. Like,
yeah,
my proximity to that does add to my trauma, but it doesn't mean that someone who lives in Arizona or Chicago, like, can't also feel wildly impacted and traumatized by something like that. I want to point that out too, because I do feel like I've seen conversations where people are like, well, I grew up in New York, so you just don't know. And it's like, I get that. Like, maybe not having to see it with your own eyeballs does change things, but like, people are all impacted differently by different things. And just because you don't live next to it doesn't mean that you don't get to hurt over it. But I think at the end of the day, to talk about it, and like, there are certain, like, you and I have had conversations where like certain celebrity deaths like absolutely destroyed us, even though we don't know these people. Like,
tears were shed.
Yeah. Like, and sometimes like you just don't even know why in particular it impacted you so much. And that's okay. So like, I think, and I feel like I'm bringing this up to say, I feel like another way to break the cycle of it is to know it's okay to feel impacted by it, even if it wasn't a city you live in or a person you actually knew. Like, we all feel and react to things differently. And the more in touch we can get with knowing that, and maybe not fully understanding it, but being able to connect with people who might feel the same way, to be able to talk about it, maybe that's why I'm bringing it up. I feel like sometimes people think they have to be literally physically proximity wise close to it to feel traumatized by it. But I just don't think that's the case.
My brother said something like super interesting. He said that right now a lot of people are going through the oppression Olympics. So wondering, it's like the oppression Olympics to like, who has it worse?
Yes.
All the time. And you're like, and I'm like, damn, that's good. The oppression Olympics. I don't know if that's patent, you know, if that's trademarked by my brother, but
I don't want to be a part of that.
But yeah, I don't want to be part of the oppression Olympics. That title sucks. But no, that title is actually really smart. But It's true. It's like how people, but the concept is the trauma happens because of the effect of it. Right. So 9/11, yes, we were in DC, you know, we were like, whatever, but every time we go on an airplane, we are reminded of that day every single day, just yep. like Sandy Hook. We're reminded every single day because we had to do drills. We had, you know, our kids have to do drills. We have to explain to them what a shooter is. The effect, I think, effect of the 2008 financial crisis. Mm-hmm. I was unemployed at the time and I was unemployed for months. I always go, shit, like I need to have like, you know, I need to have a financial, like I'm very specific about like making sure my resume is always updated. Like there's all these things, the effect of things, you might not feel it as hard, but the effect is going to be the same. And I think that's the traumatic aspect, that it imbues the rest of your life. Even if you didn't go through it, it imbues the rest of your life. No matter what.
It's a great point. Because but like you said, generational yeah. growth, this is how we break it, is to talk about it, to recognize it, acknowledge it, and talk about it.
Exactly. And we are always here for you to chat Amen. If you sure. need it. This was a heavy, it's a heavy topic. And I, you know, I'm probably thinking we're probably going to go back to it and maybe talk yeah. about therapy one time. But you know, thanks for joining us. We'll link the articles and the definitions of all of this to it, and also the book around the Beyond Anxiety. We'll put that on the description. But you know, try to heal. I mean, it's hard. It's hard work, and it's constant progress. It's not, you know, one and done, and it's not one day. I mean, I think we're gonna be having this conversation over many days and many years to come. But thanks for joining us. I mean, next episode is A Doc Is In. We don't have it yet, but we will. And it'll be a fun one. I mean, please go watch our Doc Is In episode. I mean, and go watch the docs. They're amazing. And I know all this to say is that they're Linda approved, and I haven't freaked out once. Well, I freaked out many times, but I haven't freaked out in the way where it's given me nightmares. So, you know,
you haven't been mad at me yet.
I haven't been, I'd never be mad at you. We talk it out normal. We talk it out through normal, like in normal channels, and be like, hey, that sucked. That's it.
Well, I feel like there would be a lot of capitalized text message being like, what the fuck did you make me watch? Why did you do this to me? But like only in the moment, like I wouldn't actually take offense to it, but I haven't gotten any of that. I've gotten a lot of capitalized, like what the fuck, but like, this is amazing. So I'm happy to know that. And I think the one that's the most fucked up, one of the most fucked up ones on the list you've already seen that we might revisit.
Yeah.
Not now, because it's a super heavy one, but I think you know which one I'm talking about.
I think we need a light one after this. Maybe a little fun or something after this.
All right. You know what? We're going to go. Can we go back to music?
Yes. Let's go back to music.
Because and this is super time relevant, the 50th anniversary of SNL. They've put out, like last weekend, they put out a ton of stuff. There's a 2-hour documentary on the music of SNL. And when I tell you, I have goosebumps just thinking about it, and I'm actually like so fucking stoked to watch it again. The first like 10, I don't even know if it was 10 minutes long, but the way that they mashed up songs with their SNL performances were mashups I never knew I needed, and they just kept getting better. Like it was so amazing. Yeah. And then to just watch these like historic, like truly historic performances. Yeah, I want to talk about that one real bad. So let's do that one. I think you'll love it. It's got some controversy in it. It's got some American television history in it. It's What's got incredible it called? Music. Ooh, shit. It's, let's see. I think it might just be like SNL through the years, 50 years of music, but let's see. Okay. SNL music documentary. Yeah, 50 years of SNL music documentary.
Yep.
It's on Peacock, of course, because that's the NBC-owned streaming. It's probably, it might, if you don't have Peacock, but you have cable, it might be on demand on NBC, because it literally just happened all last weekend.
Yeah.
So for those listening later, mid-February 2025. We're not even in March yet. But definitely on Peacock, and it's about 2 hours. It is, man, it's super fun, and that's super light. So let's do that one.
Awesome. Well, there you go. That's our next doc is. That's our next doc is in, and thanks again for joining us. And Elaine, take us out.
Stay interesting.